Throughout this preseason, I've begun to believe something about the preseason. It's good for a few things. It's good for seeing some of the young players, the top-of-the-line players getting some practice, and for fan bases to go completely out of their minds in an optimistic direction. Welcome to the optimistic Roughing the Kicker podcast on ArrowheadAddict.com, Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, at JB Briscoe on Twitter. You can always get in touch with me there. On today's episode, we're going to break down the Chiefs' third victory of the preseason for the Tennessee Titans, highlighted by an extremely efficient showing from the first team offense. Also going to look at Aaron Murray, an attempt to get Chris Conley up to speed, another not ideal offensive line, another push by Fred Williams to keep his spot on this roster, plus a look at the Chiefs' early roster cuts, a prediction for Marcus Cooper's rookie season, and another prediction for the Chiefs' defense, much, much more. The Chiefs are getting all sorts of love on a national level, which makes me both nervous and excited. But overall, it's the preseason. The Chiefs have won three games. Most of the team has looked pretty good. Right now, there's no place for negativity. I mean, I would usually wait for like week two for that to kick in. Before we get into the reason you're here listening to the show, I need to thank a couple of people and remind you of how you can help the show in the most direct way possible. Last week, we launched a Patreon.com campaign, I suppose you could call it, for Roughing the Kicker for this podcast. It's essentially just giving a little bit of money to the show so I can keep upgraded hosting through the iTunes page to keep a possibility of going multiple times per week through the regular season, which is the goal. Then eventually software, hardware, whatever it might take to help bring callers and guests onto the show, expand the show in quality and number of episodes, all sorts of things there. If you want to hear more about that, you can go to patreon.com/RTK. That is patreon.com/RTK. I'll keep this short and sweet. But a big thank you first to Benjamin Michael Rahman, who threw in his first $5, and he gave me the original idea of starting this Patreon campaign for Roughing the Kicker. And then a huge thank you to the first Twitter shout-out through the Patreon page, Christine Roadlander, which is C. Roadlander on Twitter. $15, that's enough to cover an entire month of hosting. So throw a little bit of money this way. It can be $5, $10, $15, or you can look to sponsor an entire episode. But any way you can help sponsor the show in that way is hugely, directly wonderful. Keep the show going in this forward direction to eventually it spread throughout all of the Chiefs kingdom. Thank you all, as always, for your support and for listening to this show, sharing it, writing reviews on iTunes, tweeting about it. And especially thank you to Christine and Benjamin for getting this money rolling. Hopefully we can have it continue to grow well into the regular season. Let's get into this now, starting with the game. 34-10, the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Tennessee Titans. A few notes from before the game worth talking about. First of all, Brian McGannon on Twitter tweeted, "The Titans roster looks like it was put together by an overly optimistic Chiefs fan from 2011. Rapati Patoa-Tua, Andy Studebaker, Dexter McCluster, plus a few other Chiefs on the Titans. Anthony Fasano, Philip Supernaw, Ryan Suckup, and I think I'm even forgetting a couple more off the top of my head right now. So it was a weird experience at Arrowhead. In fact, and I was at the game, I think the Titans sent out entirely ex-Chiefs as their team captains for the opening coin toss. There were definitely multiple ones. I think Fasano and Suckup were certainly there. So that was kind of a funny, I don't know if it was a jab or supposed to be something motivational. It didn't work. The Titans only scored 10 points, and it was a preseason game. So I assume it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek and not incredibly serious. But now to the things that are incredibly serious, again, on the field for this preseason game. One scary moment is that Albert Wilson left the game with a shoulder injury and was listed as questionable to return. No horrible news from Wilson so far, so it seems like he ought to be back in week one. I'd be shocked to see him play in the fourth preseason game at all, though. Speaking of guys who won't be playing next week, there was no Eric Fisher or Jeff Allen once again in this game. The offensive line started with Donald Stevenson at left tackle, Ben Grubbs at left guard, Mitch Morse at center, LDT, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif at right guard, and Paul Fanica at right tackle. I think there are three major points here from that offensive line breakdown. First of all, it seems like Mitch Morse is totally taking over, and that surprises me. I think we could see Eric Kush actually released outright in the final round of cuts for the Chiefs. Zach Fulton would, I guess, then sort of step in as the emergency backup center. But if Morse completely takes over this spot, that's good news for the Chiefs. He's the second-round pick. I sort of thought that the Chiefs would actually give the job to Kush if it was even close, so they could use Morse's diversity to go left guard, right guard, center, maybe even a tackle spot in a pinch. But maybe they think that the Chiefs think that Morse is their franchise center from this point forward, which would be good news in its own right. So it seems like Mitch Morse is taking over for center. That's one important thing to take there. Another interesting thing is that Zach Fulton, my favorite player on the Chiefs, seems to be stuck with a second team. Fanica is not going to play right tackle, if at all possible. So here's what this says leading into my third point. Here's what this says to me about the offensive line. Eric Fisher's a lock at left tackle. Ben Grubbs is a lock at left guard. Morse seems to have taken over at center. I'm starting to think that Jeff Allen is going to be the guy at right guard because I can't see it being DuVernay Tardif. But Fulton is not getting those starting reps. And if there was really a battle there at right guard between LDT and Fulton, or even LDT, Fulton, Fanica, all of those guys, I think we would see Fulton getting more snaps. Now, Fulton played 16 games last year and played pretty well for a late-round draft pick and a rookie. So Stevenson would then play right tackle, I would assume. So that's my unconfident prediction and best-case scenario, I suppose, is the offensive line goes Fisher, Grubbs, Morse, Allen, and Stevenson on the right side, though I wouldn't surprise me to see them put Allen back out at right tackle. However, what makes me doubt that is then who is playing right guard. It doesn't seem like the Chiefs are that high on LDT to have him as the starting right guard going forward, but I don't think we see Stevenson play there at all. So there's really the chance for a surprise, I guess, for the Chiefs is what happens on the right side of the offensive line, as it seems like Morse has taken over center and the left guys are locked in. Another interesting thing from this game is, my goodness, the Chiefs are trying to get Chris Conley up to speed. He missed most of training camp, and he missed the first preseason game with his injury. He led all wide receivers in snaps previously last week against the Seahawks, and he led the entire team in snaps this week against the Titans, and he led the team in snaps by quite a bit. I think the next closest guy had something like 20 fewer snaps, so the Chiefs are trying to get Chris Conley up to speed in real games as much as possible, which shows to me that the Chiefs need to get him on the field, and they understand that he's going to be an important part of this team. And now another point, though, on that, it was tweeted back to me by Ben Almquist over on Twitter at JB Briscoe. So lots of that probably had to do with Albert Wilson going out with his injury, and that's partially true. However, previously, last week, Albert Wilson still led the receiver, or I'm sorry, Chris Conley still led the receivers in wide receiver snaps, and I don't think that's an accident. The Chiefs understood that he didn't get as much playing time as he needed to in the training camp to get up to speed. Now they're doing it in real games. It's not all bad. Conley's getting some action. We'll go over the stats more in a little bit. A couple interesting things, though, to keep an eye on or to keep in mind from the game. Jay Howard had a couple of plays where he was blowing things up, and we'll come back to Alex Smith and what the offense did. But sticking with the defense for another second, Ramiq Wilson, the fourth-round pick from the Chiefs, the inside linebacker, has continued to impress through the preseason and through training camp, made a big tackle. It seems like he could be the surprise start. At least that's one thing that Arrowhead Pride tweeted. Could be the surprise starter, depending on how Josh Malga pans out. It looks like the Chiefs like him a lot. And that seems to be completely true. Now, Josh Malga just got a contract extension, and the Chiefs also drafted DJ Alexander, another inside linebacker. So they have a lot of inside linebackers. They understand now, I suppose, that their run defense last year was really embarrassing for the most part. So Wilson could continue to rise, and maybe Malga becomes that third inside linebacker, obviously with Derek Johnson locking down the other spot. But the Chiefs are going to have some level of depth at the inside linebacker position this year, which they had absolutely none of last season. Now let's look at the offense, which started hot and never really cooled down. Alex Smith and the entire offense looked awfully good from the beginning. Smith hit 6 different pass catchers early on. He was 13 for 15 with 118 yards and a touchdown in the first quarter. He was getting the ball out quickly. The offensive line was not holding up extremely well, but he got rid of the ball quickly, stepped up when he needed to, hit the guys around him, and went to Jeremy Maclin. Constantly. We'll come back to that in just a second here. Eventually, also, Fred Williams ended the game with 13 for 159 and 3 touchdowns for the entire preseason so far, but he also had a nice game. The Chiefs made it 17-0 after a 2-point conversion from Charkhandrick West, which made up for a missed extra point earlier in the game. That was a 7-play, 81-yard, 3-minute and 41-second drive, and at that point, Smith had 16 completions to 7 different players, and Jeremy Maclin had 7 of those 18. The offense was firing on all cylinders. Overall, the stats looked great, and the entire game actually might have looked better than the stats did. So Smith ends with 16 of 18 for 171, two touchdowns. Yes, two passing touchdowns to actual receivers. Jeremy Maclin gets the one from Alex Smith. Maclin also had a longest play of 29 yards, eight targets, seven receptions, 65 yards for Jeremy Maclin, and with that touchdown. You know, at this point, the Chiefs are really a wide receiver touchdown machine, something they were, if you hadn't noticed, not last year. You know, last year, I've heard reports the Chiefs did not have a receiver catch a touchdown. This year, they're going to break all sorts of records, I'm sure, and go the complete opposite direction. Smith's other touchdown went to Travis Kelce, who only had two catches, but 42 yards in that touchdown. His longest one was a 34-yarder that I thought he stepped out of bounds a couple of times, but it was challenge reviewed, and the refs did not overturn it. So a nice one play by Travis Kelce and that looked brilliant, and that touchdown. Both of those places really gave me flashes of a very comparable player to Travis Kelce. He looked like Rob Gronkowski to me, and that is high praise. In the modern NFL, obviously, I think all Chiefs fans can pretty much agree that Tony Gonzalez is the greatest tight end in NFL history, but in this super modern era, in the last, 10 years or so, Rob Gronkowski has really become the gold standard. And watching Travis Kelce, not running his routes, but whenever he goes to get the ball, the movement of his hands, the way he will attack the ball, and then his turn up the field, the way he moves his body with the ball and dealing with defenders, he looks so remarkably much like Rob Gronkowski, which is high praise, but it's not praise that I'm afraid to give Kelce at this point because he continues to sort of rise up to it. So I think Kelce's due for I don't know if I could give him a monster fantasy year if I would project that, but in a real life football game, I think Kelce's going to go in a dominant direction. He's such a matchup problem, and again, he looks like Rob Gronkowski with the ball and on his way to the ball. And someone was tweeting back and forth with me, saying that Gronkowski's more physical, Kelce's a little quicker, and both of those points are true. But if you watch Kelce and Gronkowski side by side with the way they control their body, again, before getting the ball and then after getting it, there are so many similarities there, and we should be very happy to be able to say that because that's a brilliant thing. Also on the offensive side of the ball, as I mentioned, Fred Williams later ended up adding to his stats for this preseason. Five receptions for 62 yards and two touchdowns, both from Aaron Murray, who played the entirety of the game outside of Alex Smith. Alex Smith ended the game with a 143.3 passer rating, and Aaron Murray, if you look at his stat line, 15 for 20, 146, two touchdowns and a pick. That's awfully good. It's almost better if you consider that Aaron Murray's first appearance was his one big mistake. Murray essentially scrambled out of the way and pointed directly to a Tennessee Titan and then threw the ball directly into his gut for his one really horrible pick. I believe after the game, Murray said that he was just too hyped up at that point, which is kind of scary. You don't want to see a guy who might be getting playing time get overly ecstatic to the point where he's making really poor decisions. But after that one bad throw, Aaron Murray looked very, very good in this game. Now, he's going up against a Titans team that wasn't doing anything right. Look over back on the defensive side. Marcus Mariota was 7 for 11. Mettenberger was 3 for 11. Charlie Whitehurst completed 2 of 3. The game was also cut a little bit short by about 3 minutes because we were sitting in the club level and it started pouring rain. We were slightly covered by the overhang, which was a nice touch. But it started pouring, and eventually they postponed it for lightning and then decided ultimately this is a preseason game. It's a blowout. There are 3 minutes left. Let's just call this one off. Definitely the right call there. I was okay with that result. But Aaron Murray, going back to his performance, it made me question what the Chiefs are doing with their quarterback development. So let's talk about quarterbacks with the Chiefs here for a minute. Alex Smith looked great. Chase Daniels looked really, really good in the two games previous to this one where he actually played. Murray, that one bad pick forced me to ask the question of, is this the guy you want to see the Chiefs developing as their third quarterback? Here's my philosophy for developmental quarterbacks, or even just quarterbacks in general in the NFL. You want to have your one guy. You want to have your starting quarterback who is the guy, the leader of your team, the keystone of your offense. The Chiefs, that's Alex Smith. He's the guy. There's not a competition there. Then you want to have a second guy who you can trust. You say if the number one guy gets hurt or has a really bad couple of two or three picks, seems really off, you throw this guy in, whatever you need to do there. mostly in the case of an injury, for one or two games where you think, hey, if this guy plays, this second quarterback, if he plays two games, the season's not over, he can beat anybody, but you wouldn't want him as your starter necessarily. That's Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel, I think, gives the Chiefs a chance to beat basically any team that they could have beaten with Alex Smith. So Chase Daniel and Alex Smith both fill those roles really well. My perspective on a third quarterback, though, is a guy you're developing, or maybe even a guy you're taking kind of a lottery ticket on. I'd like to see that third quarterback be a guy like, we've talked about Tyler Bray, who's the fourth quarterback on this team. He's been injured all preseason, where he has a rocket for an arm. He has some really great factors, but maybe his intangibles or his footwork or some understanding of the game, something falls short, so he's just a developmental prospect. I like to see that dynamic talent, that guy with a really, really high ceiling, although he may have a really, really low floor as the number three quarterback. With Aaron Murray, I see him probably going the way of Chase Daniel. If his career was to go in a positive direction, Aaron Murray becomes Chase Daniel. He's a number two quarterback on a team with a West Coast offense that fits. He fits the system, and he's a backup that you feel awfully good about. And if Aaron Murray's career goes really, really, really well, I think he's Alex Smith. I think that's where he ends up, and that makes sense to why Andy Reid handpicked Aaron Murray as his third quarterback to develop, because he makes a lot of sense for Andy Reid's system. You can put him in the West Coast offense as Alex Smith runs it, as Chase Daniel would run it, and in theory, there's not a huge drop-off, or hopefully Aaron Murray would develop to the point where he could run this system really, really, really well. And I'm okay with that. However, I'd rather see a guy with some really great physical tools that has a few things he needs to work on as that third developmental guy. However, you maybe look at a guy like RG3, which is a totally different topic, but Washington's a mess. Some guy with crazy physical tools, but at this point now is kind of a damaged commodity. Those guys go high in the draft. Those guys are hard to get a hold of. You got to invest quite a bit for those lottery tickets. So it's definitely a complicated system. But that's the whole. That I went through that entire thought process after Aaron Murray's one really horrible pick, and then he got right back on the horse, which was a really positive thing to see from Aaron Murray. I'm not going to pretend like him playing against the Tennessee Titans backup squad is any indication of if he's actually going to be good in the NFL. If he's ever actually going to get a start, if he'll be the next Chiefs quarterback to get who was drafted by the team to get a victory, which hasn't happened in a very, very long time. However, to see him get a little bit of adversity, to get thrown into the game, all amped up, and then, he gets ready for his big moment, and he throws a really bad pick, and then to bounce back from that, end up going 15 for 20, hit Fred Williams for a couple of touchdowns, hand that off to Charkandrick West plenty of times, although Charkandrick West ended up getting a concussion in this game. Hopefully he'll be back by week one. However, the Chiefs are going to have to bring in somebody to play in week four of the preseason. Seems like Darren Reeves and Spencer Ware will probably stay on the roster and get a lot of carries in week four, because Jamaal Charles isn't going to play, West isn't going to play, Niall Davis didn't get any carries in this game. That's up in the air. But to see Aaron Murray make a big mistake, bounce back from it, that's encouraging, even though I don't think he's a really dynamic talent. Back to Charkandrick West and Niall Davis now for a minute. The more I watch both of those two players, the more I see of Niall Davis and the more I see of Charkandrick West, the more I become convinced that the second most dynamic running back on the Kansas City Chiefs is Charkandrick West. Now, Niall Davis might be the rightful backup to Jamaal Charles. Maybe you trust him more. I'm okay with that. But when you watch what West can do with the ball, his shiftiness, his agility, and even his vision, there's something there that Niall Davis just doesn't quite have. Davis has some nice physical tools, some good up-the-field speed. He's a bigger guy. That's all fine and dandy. But Charkandrick West is the kind of guy who maybe, if you were to tell me that one Chiefs running back would succeed Jamaal Charles and kind of fill that mold, I would say, well, maybe it must be Charkandrick West, because I don't see Niall Davis ever developing that kind of vision. Now, again, I know I say this like every week at this point. I don't hate Niall Davis on any level. I think he's a fine backup running back, but I'm starting to think that West might continue to develop into a really, really interesting player that actually would be relevant in the regular season. And I really don't see Niall Davis ever developing into a number one running back. Let's go to the receiving game again here. Talk about Jeremy Maclin and Fred Williams. Those guys combined for three of the touchdowns. Maclin is obviously number one receiver, and I think Fred Williams has made his case to be this year's hopeful Albert Wilson. undrafted free agent who steps up in the preseason, develops, looks awfully good. Last year when the Albert Wilson talk was going around, I know I was being very very conservative with my expectations. It seems like every year there's a guy in the preseason, undrafted rookie free agent, who you go, hey, look at this. This guy might be something special. And so I had very tempered expectations for Albert Wilson. But it turned out that was the case with Wilson, and he's now a huge part of this team. But now he's a little bit banged up, and the rest of the receivers are questionable in different ways. Chris Conley will certainly be on the team. I mean, there's not even a doubt on earth. But he hasn't gotten up to speed yet. We don't know what to expect from him. He's also a rookie. Avant will be around. Frankie Hammond has played pretty well. But the wide receiver group is always interesting for the Chiefs. It's starting to look like it's shaping up to Fred Williams being that last guy, kind of clawing that spot away from some of the other guys who are in that conversation, from either guys like Junior Hemingway, who we've talked about for a long time, or some of the other undrafted rookie free agents who are talked about. And a couple of them were included in the cuts that the Chiefs made. Let's talk about those now. On Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs released 11 players to get them closer to the required cuts they need to make. And this next week, and then again after the fourth preseason game, more cuts have to be made across the league. The Chiefs waive wide receivers Kenny Cook and Jarrett Smith, and LaDainian Washington, three wide receivers gone there, tight end Adam Schlitz, offensive lineman Anthony Dima, Marcus Reed, and Charles Tuau, who was also in the conversation as a defensive lineman before training camp. He got some play on both sides of the ball, but obviously he's gone now. And defensive lineman Vaughn Martin, that might be the most interesting or the most recognizable name from the Chiefs, but Martin is now gone. And cornerbacks Aaron Hester and Kenneth Perry, and long snapper Andrew East. Andrew East being released surprises me a tiny bit. He was one of those $10,000 bonus undrafted rookie free agents that I talked about back a couple of months ago. And that was a fun conversation topic, but the Chiefs appear to have made their decision in the long snapper battle, which leaves them to just the one, James Winchester. So it seems like Winchester has won the long snapping battle unless they bring in a veteran somewhere going forward now. The Chiefs are now down to 10 wide receivers, 5 tight ends, 14 offensive linemen, 9 defensive linemen, and 15 defensive backs. So no huge surprises there, and the cuts will continue to roll in. This is as of 1 a.m. on Monday morning. Those are who the Chiefs have released at this point. One other little bit of news, kind of in the same vein, I suppose, other than Fisher and Allen not practicing, which we talked about a little bit. They didn't practice, but they were at practice last week, a sign that their respective returns hopefully aren't very far off. That from Adam Teicher. And then also Dee Ford practiced on Monday. He took Tamba Hali's snaps and full team drills, but neither of those guys played in the Titans game, which again, I'm completely okay with. Charles, Ford, Hali, Fisher, Allen, either those guys don't need the snaps because they're experienced, or they don't need the snaps because they're hurt right now. No need to rush those guys back for a preseason game. It doesn't matter, especially the week 4 one with just 1 week coming up before the actual season begins. Back on Tuesday, Terrez Paylor tweeted, another big practice for Marcus Peters. Two interceptions, including an awesome one he hawked in near the sideline. Then Gil Brandt, well-known former NFL exec, and now he writes on NFL.com. Gil Brandt put together his list of favorites for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Fifth was Shaq Thompson, linebacker for the Carolina Panthers. Number four was Stephon Anthony, linebacker from the Saints. Number three, Leonard Williams, defensive tackle, New York Jets. Number two, Randy Gregory, Dallas Cowboys. And his number one pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year this upcoming season is that very same Marcus Peters, first-round pick, cornerback from the Kansas City Chiefs. This really surprised me to read, because Marcus Peters, he got a little bit of praise right before the draft, and as the draft was going on, talking about how he had fallen, and he might have been the most talented corner in the draft, but for the most part, it seemed like people, kind of casual college football fans, didn't know very much about Marcus Peters, so for him to be at the top of this list, also on a team, the Chiefs, who hasn't had much playoff success lately, in case you haven't noticed, was awfully surprising. Here's what Gil Brandt wrote. Quote, to me, Peters was the most talented cornerback in the draft, and I think he slipped to 18th overall because other people didn't do the background work on him that the Chiefs did. I add parenthetically right now, what a fantastic way of phrasing it, and how fantastic will that be if that's true? I'm going to read that again, which I never do on this show, but read that again, because if that's the case, that's such a fantastic way of putting it, and it would be such a fantastic job by the Chiefs. Back from the top, to me, Peters was the most talented cornerback in the draft, and I think he slipped to 18 overall because other people didn't do the background work on him that the Chiefs did. Yes, he was dismissed from Washington last November, but my personal dealings with him, he's been a really good guy. In fact, I like his demeanor. Rather than hanging his head after he gets beaten on the field, he comes right up, smacks his fist into his hand, and says, "Throw it at me again." He's an accept-the-challenge guy, and you can see that in the corner. You like to see that in the corner. Andy Reid and defensive coordinator Bob Sutton seem to get the most out of their players, and I think Peters will negate plenty of potential catches this season. That's what Gil Brandt wrote about his number one pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year, Chiefs cornerback Marcus Peters. Peters also had a few nice plays in the game against the Titans. One of them looked very much like it could have been called pass interference, but he had at least two specific plays where he broke up a pass that he had no business breaking up, or at least after getting beat, where he recovered and saved himself there. Again, I understand the mixed feelings on the Chiefs being a team who gets some national coverage, but to see a guy like Marcus Peters get some preseason hype from a guy who really matters, Gil Brandt, whose opinion matters, I should say at least, it's pretty cool. It's a nice first step for Peters, and he's going to have a chance to live up to it because he'll be facing some really elite competition very early on. And we know Sean Smith is going to miss 3 games, but now sliding straight into some news, the Chiefs in Week 3 will be going up against one less major weapon on the offensive side of the ball. Green Bay Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson will miss the entirety of the 2015 NFL season with a knee injury. This obviously knocks him out for the Week 3 contest against the Chiefs. And Randall Cobb also was injured in the third preseason game for the Packers, but he'll be back probably by Week 1, almost certainly by Week 3. Jordy Nelson, it's a huge blow to the Packers, but that Week 3 game in Green Bay, they should be favored, they will be favored. It's how it ought to be, and I would still say that the Packers will win that game, but that's one less weapon for the Chiefs to have to deal with whenever they face off in Green Bay. Other bits of news here, the saddest bit of news is that Evan Mathis, who obviously got a lot of hype with the idea of him coming to fix the Chiefs offensive line on the right guard position, he not only didn't come to the Chiefs, he went to the Denver Broncos. Adam Schefter tweeted, "Broncos and former Eagles guard Evan Mathis agreed to a 1-year deal per league source." Now buckle in for some numbers here, and it's probably going to frustrate you, so I apologize ahead of time. At Kaplan NFL tweeted, "Deal for Mathis is up to $4 million per league source. If he hits playing time bonuses, that gets him to the $4 million." Now for a quote from back in June. Quote, "Reports have Mathis looking north of $6 to $7 million per year in a multi-year deal." That was back again in June when the Broncos, quote unquote, weren't a player for Evan Mathis. So his expected money dropped by $2 to $3 million and became a 1-year contract. Now here's what I wrote when I originally talked about that. This still applies. Ben Grubbs is a $2.4 million cap hit this year, jumps to $6.3 next year, and over $7 in 2017. Taking on $7 million per year with Evan Mathis, those original report numbers, would have been too much invested in the guard spot, with $3.4 million already in the other guards this year as well. So stacking another $6 or $7 million next year, so you're paying, you have $14 million or so lined up in your guards in 2016, That's a big chunk of your salary cap for two veteran guards there. So I get why the Chiefs wouldn't want that. However, just $4 million for just one season for Evan Mathis, that would have fit. The Chiefs could have made that space. And then Mike Kliss tweeted, "Evan Mathis' deal is 1 year, $2.5 million with a chance to earn the $4 million. He had protested his $5.5 million salary in Philadelphia, which is why he was released." Also, Peyton Manning took about a $4 million pay cut. Well, here it is. This is where it goes. It goes to Evan Mathis to help keep Peyton Manning standing upright. So, not only is it frustrating to the Chiefs, the Chiefs might have had a chance to bring in Mathis for just one season, which I would have been in favor of, even though I was not in favor of bringing him in for multiple years. He went to the Broncos to help keep Peyton Manning standing up, which is the worst-case scenario for the Evan Mathis storyline to wrap up. So we'll be seeing him at least twice this season and be affected by his play with the Broncos many more times than that. It's just a bad story for a Chiefs fan. Another bit of news, Demetrius Harris, the Chiefs tight end, was activated from the physically unable to perform list to the active roster, which is good, adds a little bit more depth to the Chiefs tight end scenario. All in favor of more Demetrius Harris. Very, very much glad that he's back. Also on the offensive line, and for a different team in the AFC West, the Oakland Raiders have lost starting right tackle Menelik Watson for the season. He ruptured his Achilles tendon in the first half of their third preseason game. So that's a pretty big loss for the Raiders offensive line. Just something to be aware of. You know, we saw Dee Ford lining up on the left side, and Justin Houston usually lines up over the right tackle. So just another matchup advantage there for whenever the Chiefs end up playing the Raiders. But injuries like that are always still a bummer, even whenever they benefit the Chiefs. Now for the last story here of this episode, let's go back to another national story surrounding the Chiefs. Robert Klimko of Sports Illustrated and MMQB.com put together a Kansas City Chiefs training camp report. It was published back on August 27th. Now, he says here he saw a morning practice with shells and the last day of camp in St. Joe. So he didn't see nearly as much of camp as the local guys like Therese Paylor, Herbie Teope, all those guys who are constantly around the Chiefs. Those beat writers do a fantastic job. But it's interesting to get a national perspective every once in a while, so I'm going to do that here and look at the few things that Klimko took away from his time with the Chiefs. He starts off his entire report saying, Eric Berry's arrival brought a jolt of energy to the Chiefs as they opened camp, but, as Klimko writes, Kansas City's offense causes concern, and that begins with quarterback Alex Smith and the men tasked with protecting him. Three things, he writes, that people need to know about the Chiefs that he learned from training camp. Number one, there's an aura with this team unlike any other, and it starts with Eric Berry. There are hardly words for the adrenaline shot that was the sight of number 29 showing up at his locker this summer like he never left after quietly spending the offseason in treatment for lymphoma. The sense of urgency silently conveyed by Berry as a singular leader in the NFL could be felt even during a non-padded practice on move-out day at MWSU. Number two, the offensive line is a work in progress, and that's bad news for Alex Smith, who is reliant as any quarterback in the NFL on a formidable run game and the threat of play action. The interior line is a jumble, with the team planning on starting rookie second-rounder Mitch Morse at center in place of departed Rodney Hudson, last season's lone bright spot in the offensive line. Often disappointing 2012 second-rounder Jeff Allen will likely start at right guard. Left guard Ben Grubb started every game last year in New Orleans, but was nowhere near the 2013 version of himself, which is why New Orleans was ready to deal the 31-year-old in exchange for a fifth-round pick. The interior line situation makes you wonder if Kansas City might have benefited from pursuing Eagles castaway Evan Mathis, now a Bronco. Klimko then continues, though, number three, that said, running back Jamal Charles has a habit of making lemonade out of lemons. He's a complete back, but he also happens to be stronger off the tackles, where the Chiefs are adequate as run blockers. Plus, this might actually be the year Charles' backup in 2013 third-round selection, and Al Davis emerges as Kansas City's future at the position. He's taking the bulk of the workload in the preseason, as the team works to keep Charles fresh after seven seasons and nearly 7,000 yards. I butt in here now to say, obviously, as I said earlier, I don't think Al Davis is the future of the Chiefs running back situation, and I don't think he'll show that this year. However, if Davis can take some of the workload and Charkendrick West can take some of Charles' workload and those guys can be effective in small bits and pieces, I would be completely happy with that. Skipping for a few other little things here from, said he really liked Derek Johnson, watching him play, thought he looked good, which we've been saying for a while. He writes his five ... observations. These are all kind of interesting. Ball-hawking first-round pick Marcus Peters has made a strong case to replace cornerback Sean Smith for good when the latter returns from a three-game suspension for violating the league's substance abuse policy. I disagree that he's going to replace him for good. Sean Smith is going to be very important for this team this year, so that seems like a little bit of an overstatement, but Peters might be trying to fight his way into a starting lineup position consistently, I suppose. Dontari Poe is working his way back from a July surgery, which we all know. His understudy, Jay Howard, has looked strong in limited preseason action. Jeremy Maclin will end Alex Smith's unthinkable streak of 16 games without a touchdown pass wide receiver. Their connection on deep routes has been a highlight of Chiefs camp. He continues, there won't be a meaningful dress rehearsal for this offensive line as it deals with the injuries. It actually says injuries for Jeff Fisher and Eric Fisher, which should mean Jeff Allen and Eric Fisher. Jeff Fisher is the coach of the St. Louis Rams. He's not starting on the offensive line. And he writes that the team is excited about the development of Albert Wilson, an undrafted rookie a year ago. We know who Albert Wilson is. This is a Chiefs podcast. However, even though occasionally they call Jeff Allen Jeff Fisher. I think it's interesting to get a national perspective of the Chiefs whenever they get a little bit of coverage to sort of see what the general perception is from outside of Kansas City, because we're also saturated in the team and every little thing that happens. It's interesting to see what the outside world thinks of this Chiefs team going forward into this season, where apparently there's some hype, at least we know, around guys like Marcus Peters and Jeremy Maclin, and seeing what this offense takes this team, not to mention the pressure on guys like Justin Houston with the defensive line that is without Dontari Poe. So to see the national guys actually taking a look at those issues, kind of interesting. That's going to do it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can always get in touch with me, in touch with the show, at JB Briscoe on Twitter, JBBRISCO. If you got any thoughts, comments, questions about the show, if you want to help support the show, you can leave reviews on iTunes, share the show with your Chiefs friends, fans, family, and now you can actually give money to the show to help keep it functioning on all cylinders, stretching out the bandwidth limits to be able to spread the show to all corners of Chiefs Kingdom. That's at patreon.com/RTK, patreon.com/RTK. All the details are there. And if you have any questions specifically about that or anything else, tweet me and we'll get to them. As always, thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. I'll be back next week and we'll be taking a look at the actual regular season just on the horizon. I, for one, cannot wait. Thanks for your time. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?